1 and 2, and the principles of honesty and hope. Give her a nice round of applause. You're welcome. God bless you.
Thank you. That's so awesome. Thank you. Hi. I'm Gwen. I'm a food addict. I practice a two-way prayer almost every day, and it's been hugely important to my spiritual condition. And the one that I wrote this morning, I would like to read for you. Dear God, thank you for so many blessings appearing in my life and all around me. Thank you for the recording of Sandy Beach talking about steps 1 and 2 this morning. That is nothing less than a miracle that those things I desire come to fruition. If only I wait, you give them to me. You give me clear guidance that I'm able to wait for and recognize them when they appear. My senses have been opened to seeing those things that were maybe there before, but I was so focused on the irritating things that I could never see the things that you had in front of me. No wonder I thought you had abandoned me. It was I who had stopped looking to you for guidance. I was looking at the earthly realm to fill my soul, and it never satisfied me. I'm ready for whatever the day brings, and my intention for this day is to be the love in the room, that you are in me and speaking through me. It's been very busy these last couple weeks, and this is a wonderful opportunity to share my recovery and help others find their way home to you. Love, your favorite daughter, Gwen. And his response: Dearest Gwen, you are indeed traveling the path that was meant for you. The things you have learned and accepted as truth about the cycle of your family, it's been trapped in a cycle over and over. The process of healing has begun, but first someone needed to realize the truth before anything could have the potential to change. Don't fall asleep to the truth, but share it with your family as a spiritual toolkit and lay it at their feet. They can only understand the truth by looking at it of their own free will. You need not worry about how they receive the truth, only to share with them and leave them to decide what they believe. Be where you are. Focus on the person who is in front of you. Be undivided in your attention. Eat well, sleep, rest when you feel overwhelmed. Step back often and keep connected with me. You will experience what was written in a very popular spiritual book. They will walk and not faint. They will take up with wings as eagles. And he signed it, I am divine love and divine truth. Learning the absolute truth has set you free. Now go and free others. And since I'm talking about honesty, I need to practice my two-way prayer, being 100% honest about how I'm feeling. And if I'm trying to pretend that I'm someone I'm not, he doesn't respond to that. And when Bill W., you know, said it's so important to be honest, be honest, be honest, I think some of the things that means is that I really have to know what God's truth is, because mine is all jumbled up and scrambled and all mixed up, like Laura was sharing in the pre-convention thing today. And so I had to look at, how does God see me? That's the kind of truth that I needed to see, was how does God see me? And whatever spiritual background you have, you can look and see what the teachings were that says you're a beautiful creation, you're the pinnacle of all of his creation. I'm his favorite daughter. Ha ha! Everybody gets to be his favorite daughter. Everybody gets to be his favorite son. And when I started reflecting those things in my two-way prayer, I started getting that back. Like, yes, you are my favorite daughter. Yes, you are doing well. Yes, sometimes it's difficult, but you are growing when it's difficult. When it's not difficult, you're not growing. Darn, right? And there's so many things that I've had to be honest about that were hard. I didn't want to admit that I was an addict of any kind, let alone with food, because food was my first love when I didn't know where else to run. My honesty was that I had to have food in order to feel okay. I didn't know how to feel okay unless I was eating something that was, oh yeah, gave me comfort. And that was my honesty. It might not have been God's truth, but it was my truth. And when I shared my truth, God honored that by helping me along. And I've had lots of different ideas about who God is along the way. And I had various stages of honesty I was able to practice. You know, in the beginning, I was like, do I really have to divulge this or divulge that? I don't want to ever tell anybody this, ever tell anybody that. And everything that I was afraid to open up and reveal was really hard to do. There was a time when I got in recovery in 2012, September 4th, and I was struggling with alcohol because I had graduated, you know, from food to alcohol when I got old enough. Ooh, this lasts longer. I like this. So when I got in recovery there with alcohol, well, I checked myself into treatment. I had to be honest about how much I was drinking, and I didn't want to be honest about that. You know, I had people ask me, how much do you drink? Oh, not that much. You know, when it comes to food, well, how much do you eat? Not that much. I hardly ever see you eat that much. That's because I didn't eat very much in front of other people. I would go and eat in the closet or, you know, eat in the car before coming in to eat again. And I didn't want to be honest about those things because I was so ashamed of it. I didn't know that I had a frickin' disease. And when I found out the truth that this is a disease, I actually got some hope out of that from reading in the doctor's opinion that, how does that go? It's a medical condition where we have an allergy. And I thought, wow, this is not a moral failing? You're kidding. I was always ashamed of not being able to handle my liquor or handle my food because all the people around me would say, well, just quit. Why can't you quit? What's wrong with you? I don't have that problem. What's wrong with you? People do not understand how this disease affects us. But I didn't want to be honest when I went to treatment the first time. And I thought, you know what? I have got to be able to stop. I have got to have recovery. I've got to have 100%. So when I first went to treatment, I asked this counselor, you know, I'm being discerning, right? Hey, what's your rate of recovery here? Like I had any choice, you know, right? He goes, it says, recovery is 100% for those who follow the suggestions. Oh, my God, I grabbed onto that. Oh, my God, I got to have that, 100%. I want that. That's what I want. Because I couldn't face going back to how I had been behaving. I was so afraid. I was more afraid to continue living like I was than I was to face the unknown of stopping. And what do they call that? The gift of desperation, if I can get that out. And you know, when I was in treatment there, they asked me, "Well, hey, what are you doing and how much are you drinking?" I'm like, "Oh God, I had to be honest about everything." And even they said, "Okay, you got anything else?" You know, they're going around the room and they ask you, you know, what your journey's been. And these other people, they're going, "Well, I had drugs here, or drugs there." And I'm like, "I think I'll just keep that back and I won't say nothing." And when it got to be my turn, something in me said, "Just throw that out there too." Where'd that come from? So I admitted to that too. I was like, "Oh shit, I was going to hang on to that. Damn it." And you know, I was honest, but I had help being honest, and I did not know that was happening at the time. Another thing that I heard in treatment was only 1 in 10 people who go through treatment will be sober in 5 years. And I thought, 1 in 10? Okay, that's me. That's me. I want that. So I'm hanging on. Yo, I want 100%. Yes, I want 10 years. I want it all. And, you know, when it got to be, okay, I got, a couple of years, clean and sober, and then food was like, oh, coming back. I started putting on weight, and I thought, I've been turning my life over to God and telling him the truth, and why is this food a problem now? That's not fair. Why me? And I think one of the reasons is that honestly, I'm in a position where I can relate to more people because I've had problems with 3 things. And codependence, oh gosh, I've had that too. People pleasing, I've had that too. And God has been so good to me that he has lifted those things out of my brain, just gone. The last resentment I had was in June 20th of 2024. And I've had a few instances of a step 10 where I got a little irritated, but those things now, they bounce off of me. What did I do? First of all, I had to be honest about who I thought I was, who God says I am. I had to align with God's truth instead of trying to present the world with my idea of the truth. So when Bill Wilson talks about honesty being, a cornerstone, you can't find recovery without it. And as embarrassing as it was and humiliating as I thought it was, the more I opened up, and I cried opening up, the more people came and comforted me. The more God came and comforted me. Because I was connecting with the truth. And God honors the truth. And he connects with feelings. I found out that God's language is feelings. So if you don't want to feel your feelings, you can't connect. And that's been just like, wow. So that's what's going on here. I've had lots and lots of different versions of who I thought God was. Nature, the group, a co-sponsor. I did some Buddhist teachings for a while where I'm like, okay, is this the truth? Is this the truth? Because there were some things in my religion that I couldn't stomach. I couldn't turn my will and my life over to the care of God that I didn't trust. And I didn't know why I didn't trust God. Just my upbringing and how I had learned and how I, how you get beaten around by life. So much stuff gets plugged up in my channel, my pipeline to the spiritual wellness. And I gotta say that I have a little rock in my pocket. I think I'm gonna pull that out because I just had it in there just because I thought maybe I would want it. It says hope on it. It's just a something that a gal at a convention would paint, and she'd bring them there and hand them out. Just had a basket, you know, and she gave one to me here special last year, and I thought, oh, that is so sweet. And when I found different ways to connect with my higher power, it gave me hope. And some days I couldn't connect at all. And some days I found I'm not really seeking the truth. How do I find the truth? And then I started thinking about how did Bill Wilson, the guy who started all this brouhaha, how did he stay sober for 6 whole months without a program, without a sponsor, without all of the support, without phone lines, without a big book? How did he do that for 6 months without relapsing? He went and talked to people, pulled them off bar stools, and said, you got it, 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 you got it. You got to hear, you got to see what I've seen, you got to see what I've seen. Dr. Silkworth finally said, Bill, you got to lay off the spiritual stuff, the God stuff. Because drunks, they wouldn't listen to that. Oh, yeah, you're nuts, go away, go away. He said, you got to hammer home this physical malady that you are hopeless. I have to admit to myself that it is the truth that if I ingest any of these alcoholic foods or drinks into my body, it sets off that allergy, and the compulsion to overeat takes over my brain again. It gets my brain squirreling around like a hamster on a wheel. It won't start. And it's never good. It's always garbage that it's telling me how I'm horrible, how I can't do it, and what makes me think I can do it, and what makes me think that I'm special or anything. And it's always so degrading. And that's what that little bit of alcoholic food does to me. It sets my brain off into a swirl of nuts. So this is the honesty I needed to see, that every time I had something like that, this is what I was doing to myself. Whoa, that's a heavy one. Another thing that I had to be honest about was when I was growing up, I had sexual abuse when I was, 7 or 8 years old, and I don't remember a whole much about it. Except that the person told me, I couldn't tell. I wasn't allowed to tell. No, don't tell. And for 43 years, I didn't tell anybody because I was ashamed of it. I thought it was, you know, my fault. I didn't really even know what it was until I was in the 7th grade and I heard the teacher talking about sex education, and she says, well, it's not anything dirty, and it's natural, and this is just how your body works. And all these girls in the classroom, they're all laughing at them. They know what I did. I thought they were laughing at me. I thought they were laughing at me. They were just laughing at the subject. But when you're that age, you don't. Oh, man, if you don't fit into the herd. Whoa. I mean, I shriveled up like a, what the hell shrivels up? A crab that sucks himself back into the shell, or a turtle, right? Okay. And I didn't talk about it. I went on and I just pretended it didn't exist. And I was living a lie, pretending it hadn't happened, pretending that everything was okay, I was fine. But deep down, that little girl in me was saying, there's something not right here. This isn't right. This isn't right. This isn't who you are. And I felt like there was this tugging at me my whole life, tugging at me. You know, you get that feeling like you just feel like uneasy and anxious and you don't know where that's coming from. I think that was that little girl inside me tugging, going, you're going the wrong way. You need to go that way and tell the truth. You need to be honest and open up. I was too scared to do that. And, you know, when you're a kid, you don't know how to process that. So I think a lot of people have had things similar to that, which we just hide, and we don't ever let anybody know about it. And we think, oh, if I say something, you know, so-and-so will get in trouble, and we're always, like, protecting someone else instead of taking care of ourselves. And that's what I was doing. I was, well, I gotta be quiet because otherwise so-and-so will get in trouble. And I didn't want to be a snitch because a snitch is no good. I mean, that's what we learn when we're kids. But when I got into treatment and quit my my most problematic substance, I did not open up in the group about it. I actually went to a therapist where I opened up about it by writing it. I couldn't even say it out loud. And that's when I heard that 1 in 4 women, 25%, have been sexually abused in their lifetime. And, well, where are you going to hear those statistics? If you are never honest about something like that happening, you're not going to know because you're lying to yourself that it hasn't happened. It's not real. And that was the same thing I was doing with food. Oh, I'm eating this, but it's not real. I'm not really eating it. I'm not really gaining weight. You know, these clothes, they still kind of fit. It's okay. And I just kept making excuses for myself. And I just totally could not be honest. What else can I say about honesty? Telling the truth has been really hard. But when I work the steps, having that honesty all the way, as much as I can, help me. And it's scary to open up to someone that you don't really know, and you don't know, geez, you know, can I trust this person? Can I be honest? And when you talk with a sponsor, if you can be honest, you're going to go a long ways. But here's the thing about honesty and having a spiritual toolkit laid at your feet is that if you feel obligated to tell the truth or obligated to work the steps or obligated to do something, you have a little twinge of resentment in the back of your mind, just a little one there, like, oh, I don't really want to do this, but okay, I'll do it. But deep down, the truth is you don't want to do it. So that's not being 100% honest. That little bitty twinge in the background there derails your honesty so that you, if you're only 99% honest, it's like you're 0% honest. It's either going to be all the way or it doesn't work. And the God of my recovery God, is very, 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 very patient and very compassionate and very, I can't think of another word. Help me. Patient and compassionate and understanding. He knows what I've been through. He knows what the truth is. He just needs me to open up and let it out. He won't come in and get it, because that would be invading my free will. So I need to open up and let it out. If I wait for someone to pull it out of me, I'm not doing it on my free will. So honesty has to be of your own free will. Not because, oh, this is something I'm supposed to do. I'm checking the box. I'm dotting the I, I'm crossing the T. It has to be something that you are doing because you're willing to do it, because you want to do it, because you're okay with doing it. Even if you take a little tiny step in the direction of opening up a little bit, it's kind of like, have you ever seen those like speed advance like pictures of flowers opening up? Yeah. So that's kind of how we are, is that God waits for us and he shines his love on us and he helps us to open up. He doesn't come down there and go, open up. I'm waiting for you. He doesn't do that. He doesn't do that at all. He doesn't do that at all. God of my understanding, recovery God, I'm calling him recovery God, because a God of my religion, I couldn't make that work. I needed to be honest about how my idea of my higher power was working. And I tried to make God of my religion work. I tried, but I just kept relapsing and relapsing and relapsing. I was abstinent for about 18 months in 2018, and then I relapsed, and it took me 5 years to get abstinent again, which now I'm on like 19 months. And this has been a huge factor in that, that I have to share my honesty, and I got to find what God's truth is. And the truth that he says to me is that I am worthwhile, that he has work for me to do, that he wants me to help other people to find him. And it's been, honestly, it's been kind of like a scavenger hunt, which is awesome because I like games. I like fun. Because sometimes recovery can be like, oh, okay, we're trudging along. Can we have some fun? So deep, you know, back in the back of my head, I'm going, When are we going to have some fun? Because inside me, that little girl that had her childhood cut short was still dying for some fun. And one of the things that having a fit spiritual condition is to play. And to play. And to be okay with playing. Honestly, that's another thing I had to be honest about. I wanted to have some fun. The little kid in me wanted to have fun again. So I found some different ways to play. I got to show you this one. I watch a lot of videos, and I saw this one with this lady. Got a bubble machine. And she just had fun with it by driving around in her car and going to stop signs and putting it out her window. I took this thing to the airport and picked somebody up there with this on top of my hood. Oh my God, it was so much fun. And I wish I had been able to video record that, but it is in the minds of about 200 people that saw me do that. So having fun is something that God wants me to do. He wants everybody to do. He wants us to have a healed hearts. And if we're still always like, oh, I can't get this. Why? What am I doing wrong? Try some play. Try some play. Because play nurtures your soul and it brings you back to life like a flower that's coming into bloom, like a great big sunflower or something like that. I don't know. Pick your flower, whatever kind you like. I got an app on my tablet. It's a coloring app. It's a color by number app. I sit there for hours. It keeps my brain busy so that I'm not thinking, right? And, you know, all of this finding ways that God wants me to be has given me so much hope. Because in the beginning, I was like, trudge, you know. When's it going to get better? When I started watching things that God was doing in the people around me, I could see him at work. One of the things that I had for a higher power was I used to be a lone power pole. You know, out in the rural areas where they have like electric pole, and there's a pole like out in the rural country, and there's one house at the end, and they have one pole. So that's all the power they got coming to the house. If that pole gets knocked down or that wire gets cut, they got nothing. They got nothing. That's where I was, isolated, and I was not connected to anyone else. And God didn't mean for us to do this alone. So what I have found is that I need to build a power station of connections. Every time I come and talk to somebody on the phone, or I meet people on Zoom now, because I have a sponsee who's in North Carolina. We've been meeting every day for about, since September. And I don't really know if I can share her story, but she's been in the program for 40 years. She's only had 30 days of abstinence one time in 40 years. Right now she has 85. She has 85. Because of connection, she's connected again. She was such a lone power pole. So if you're a lone power pole, oh my God, get connected. Get connected. Reach out. Sometimes people don't reach back. But it's not about what they do. It's about what you do. If you're honestly looking for connections, just keep doing it. Just keep doing it. Okay. Anything else I want to share? One of the best things that I've gotten out of this is, like I said, I've looked into how Bill W. stayed sober for that 6 months, and he had that spiritual experience that was just phenomenal, that kept him upright for so long. And studying what happened to him, who he was talking to, what he was reading, people that I listened to the old recordings of him, and there's some out there. He mentions in the big book, The Varieties of Religious Experiences by William James. I've heard it said it's really hard to read, but you know what? You look it up on YouTube and you go, William James, there's a ton of videos there where you can listen to, oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, if you want to be a student of recovery, start looking into how Bill W. got where he got. And this is what has happened because of what he did. So going to workshops and going to conventions is wonderful. But don't forget, the very first teacher we had was Bill W. Undiluted Bill W. can work miracles. This lady, she's got 85 days of abstinence. She hasn't had that in 40 years. Connection. Stay connected. And I hope that gives you lots of hope, because if it doesn't, talk to me later, okay? Thank you. I've been so honored to be here. And don't forget to play, right? My bubbles.
That's good. Right. That's good.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
I heard her say it, and I really need it. Contact, contact, contact. I can't do this by myself. And I need to reach out. I need to contact my God. I need to contact God's people here on earth. So, contact.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mary Jo. I'm a compulsive overeater. And because of the program, but mostly the faces that I look at in these rooms, I've lost 100 pounds and kept it off for 15 years. So thank you. And I am so happy to see a lot of people, because during, I almost fell apart during when everything was closed down. And then for a while, it didn't just snap back. And I sit here tonight, and this just reminds me of the energy that these events used to have, and I'm so glad that we're just starting to come back. I cannot stay abstinent without my people. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Mary, Compulsive Eater.
Amen.
Gwen, thanks so much. That was awesome. And thank you to the committee. This whole thing is awesome. I love the energy. I love the theme, Be Alive. When I first saw it, I thought, yeah, I need to be more alive. That's a great idea. I need to really be alive while I'm alive. I've really enjoyed it. I love the bee thing, the songs and the silliness and I just love it all. And the seriousness about this disease kills. And there's a solution. And it's here. And so I love it all. I really enjoyed some things, and I heard some things at my table when we discussed it. The idea of the lone pole and then as opposed to hooking into a power station, I love that. I'll take that away. I thought it was a nice reframe, a different way to talk about being in community with each other and staying out of isolation. Love that so much. I love the bubble machine. Many at our table were talking about, we got to go get a bubble machine. Some said they had a bubble machine and they don't have a bubble machine anymore, so they got to get another bubble machine. So Amazon's probably going to be seeing a lot of bubble machine sales, so thanks for that. They'll be happy. And that's not an endorsement. I apologize. I'm not endorsing. Sorry. I love that getting back to the basics of how Bill got sober before there was all these wonderful resources. I'm coming up on 5 years in November, or October, God, I have another, sorry, I'm in another fellowship. I'll have 35 years in November, but I'll have 5 years here since I've come back in October. And that's one of the things when I noticed I started sabotaging that, one of the things I started focusing on and asking myself was, what did Bill do before there was all of this? And how did that work? So just really getting back to the basics. And then some shared at our table about the importance of honesty, and that rung true for me and loved hearing you share about all of that. And that was the thing, you know, when I came back, you know, and changed the way I worked my program. And because I used to be in a faction, all these different factions where everybody told you exactly what to do, when to do, how to do it. Why did, you know, there was a lot of control. And when I came back, I'm like, I'm just going to work the OA program. I'm not going to be in a faction. I want to be in OA. And the literature just has inspired me so much. But just that honesty of this is who I am, this is how it's working for me, has changed everything. And I'm grateful for that. And I love the reminder of the free will thing, that it's got to be something that comes from me. And so when I share or comes from, you know, when I share it with others, let it be. It's their free will. It's their choice on how they receive that or if they receive it. But my job is to keep sharing it so that I can stay abstinent. So I'll pass with that.
Hey, I'm Joy, compulsive overeater. Hi. So, I brought my notes so I'd get started. Once I'd start, then it'll just go, you know. She says, what's your rate of recovery? I thought, wow, that took a little nerve. But I love the answer. I love the answer. 100%. If I do what is suggested to me, oh, you know, what could be better? What could be better? And the suggestions, as was said, alluded to by our speaker, is to find out who the hell I am and who God intends me to be. And I'm me and I'm not you, and you're not me. You know, we are meant to be different. Our body, I've come to grips with, I'd love to put all of us up here and stand on this stage. There won't be two bodies that look alike. There won't be any two that look alike. We are as different, you know, as they say snowflakes, but I don't know about them. But we are different, and we are meant to be different. And I can only find my truth. I can't find yours. You can't give me something. I have to want it. I have to follow the suggestions. And the suggestions work. And it is 100%. And I'm grateful I can say I've been free from sugar for whenever, how many years it's been, 2013. I've been free from artificial sweeteners since 2015. I've been in this program for close to 50 years. I've had a lot of ridiculous relapses. I wouldn't trade any of it. This program does keep me alive. It keeps me alive through my own children, through my grandchildren. My husband is getting sick. I have a deceased brother-in-law who I'm, you know, taking care of all the things that you do for family when they pass away. I'm still going, and it's because of this program. I'm 81 years old, and I pass.
Anybody else care to? Time is up.
I'll be really quick. But, you know, you said, Gwen, that we have to be honest in order to get closer to God. So I just didn't want to miss the opportunity to be honest and to talk about how my switch into next level honesty is just really saving my life right now. I first came into OA in 1980 in the middle of college. And I got set free from bulimia in 1990. So this year, it will be 35 years since I purged. And I could not go 5 minutes. I mean, it was bad. I almost died. But that being said, I finally had to yield. You said 99% honest is not going to do it. And all of a sudden, I just couldn't stay abstinent. I'd get abstinent for years. I've been mostly abstinent. But I just would relapse. I just would go back, and I wouldn't stay all the way in. So it's been a long time. But I finally got a new sponsor. I'm reworking the steps. And for the first time in 35 years, I was willing to write down the red light freaking foods. And I don't even know what to say. It is a massive surrender. I let go of everything I can think of. She's like, is that everything? And I really think it is. And I said, if God shows me anything else, I said, I promise you, I will tell you, because I don't want anything getting in the way of the joy and fullness that God has for me. So thanks. I'll pass it.
Time for one more. Anybody care for to share a bit?
Thanks, Michael. I'm Lori, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Lori.
Gwen, thanks so much. I really loved it, and I look forward to listening to it again. I was struck by the fact that we speak of honesty frequently for 2 to 3 minutes, not for 30, not for a deep dive the way that Gwen gave it to us tonight. And the other thing that struck me is, I'm going to paraphrase, but it has to be honesty through the lens of God's will, not through the lens of my own will. So that isn't any kind of a test, you know, that I've been doing, but it's something that I'm going to add to my protocol. But I wanted to comment on Bill W., and I wanted to share, because I've had two spiritual experiences with Bill W., and not personally, of course. The first one is I listened to the Big Book cover to cover on audio. And it was narrated by a man, not Bill W., of course, but in my mind, it became Bill W. And that experience brought the Big Book to life for me in a completely different way than reading 3 or 4 pages per month in my home meeting type of thing. So that inspired me last September. I did go to the convention in Cleveland, and with a couple of people who were here, we took a field trip on Saturday afternoon to Dr. Bob's house in Akron, and that was amazing. Amazing. There's not even enough time that I could talk about that, but like being in the rooms where Bill and Bob were, they spent the whole summer, they have this amazing library where they archive the original documents. It truly was just a spiritual experience, and it just really touched my program. So thanks for that, Gwen.
Let's see here. You know, we're talking about Akron, Ohio. I happen to be a member of that fellowship as well. But I had before I was in that fellowship, I belonged to an organization, and I drank in the Mayflower Hotel in that bar. I drank in that bar. But before I close all of this out, let me just share this one thing about. I don't know if you know Kevin and Steve. Great guys. Good OA buddies, lots of service, a lot of things doing together, helping people. They're sitting on the porch one afternoon, and Kevin and Steve were talking about, yeah, I wonder if there's OA in heaven. So they made a pact. They said, well, listen, hopefully none of us leave too soon, but if one of us goes, let's come back and tell each other. So Kevin and Steve, they went about their ways, and Steve was on the porch one afternoon, and here comes Kevin walking down the driveway, and he, unfortunately, was an early demise. He comes walking down the heaven, or walking down the high, or the, pardon me? Thank you, I was waiting for somebody to say it. Walking down the driveway, of course, Steve was walking down the driveway, and Kevin was, gee, I wonder if there's OA in heaven. Wonder. So Steve came up on the porch, and, boy, so glad to see you, Kevin says to Steve. Well, is there OA in heaven? He said, yes, there is. There's OA in heaven. And you're chairing the meeting Wednesday night. Okay, some quick announcements.